This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
When people think of Houston, Texas, and they want something done right, they think of Tiffany Curry. They're not thinking of the color of my skin or my gender. They're thinking of my capabilities, my competence.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever time it is. You have tuned into the Color of Money podcast. I am Julia Lachey, and I am joined by my co-host, Emmerick Peace, Bo Menkiti, and we have a fabulous guest with us today. Since we have Bo today, Bo is going to interview Tiffany about some fantastic things. Bo, can you please tell us who Tiffany is and what we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, this is a really exciting episode here because we've got Julia, we've got Emmerick, and we have the amazing Tiffany Curry with us, one of the leaders in residential real estate nationally. She's based in Houston. She has found a way to combine her love for real estate and her love of people to build a phenomenal business. And you know, here at The Color of Money, we always talk about our four pillars of how we build a phenomenal residential real estate business, how we have opportunities in investing in businesses and in real estate, how we can advance our leadership so we can lead in our communities, and finally, how we can have an opportunity to build wealth and change the racial wealth gap here in America and pass on generational wealth to the next generations that come. And Tiffany has an amazing story that lines up so well with those four pillars. For those of you who don't know, just a little bit of hype about Tiffany. She owns the first 100% Black-owned Berkshire Hathaway franchise. She spent 14 years in the business servicing people all across the spectrum and has now taken that to leading and launching one of the most successful franchises in Houston. She also, this past year, was on the 2022 Swanepoel 200 watch list of the most powerful executives and leaders in our residential real estate industry. Thanks for joining us, Tiffany.
Thank you so much, Bo. I'm super excited to be here. I love you guys so much. I've seen you guys from a distance, and I'm so excited about what you're doing. I'm even more excited and honored to be a part of this session today.
Maybe just to kick us off, I always ask this question because I'm always interested in learning how people got into this industry. Can you tell us a little bit about your like real estate origin story? Like, how'd you get interested in this industry and how'd you get started?
Well, the funny thing about it is I was going to be an attorney. So I decided to take a semester off in between my degrees, but somebody in one of my management classes was going to get her real estate license. And I said, you know what? That sounds fun. I'd like to do that. She never did, but she gave me the real estate school. And so I just took everything correspondence and I said, you know what? On the 6 month break, I'll just try real estate just so I can learn because I wanted to learn from an urban planning and development standpoint. So that's why I got my real estate license. And that 6 months has turned into 17 years.
Wow.
Wow.
And I never went to law school.
You're lucky, I think. You
skipped it. Definitely blessed with poor because I definitely did not expect to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about how from starting out with an interest in communities and urban planning and law and getting into real estate, how did that evolve to owning your own business?
The first thing I would say, it started with leadership. And the idea, remember, I was going to get my license with someone else who knew a lot more about the process than me. I didn't know anything. So I just went off of what she gave me. And I took those classes while I was at the university because they gave you the books. I bought the ones you take home. So I actually didn't know anything. Before you knew it, I had an inactive real estate license. And that's how easy it was to enter this business at that time. So I had this inactive real estate license. And my thought process is, I need to know what I'm doing. So the first thing I did was I said, well, let me get a loan officer's license. I never wanted to do mortgage, but I wanted to understand the money. Because I did know that if you don't understand money, the rest of this doesn't make sense. So I actually got the mortgage license as well. And I practiced that at a mortgage company, basically interning, learning how the money side of it worked. So when I did come out of schooling and actually start in real estate and using my actual license, I already understood the financial side of real estate, but at the same time, I didn't know real estate.
Can I ask you a question about that? Just something that I'm always fascinated by. If I heard you correctly, you said you got into the industry and you had a desire to learn.
Yes.
So you learned before you earned. You didn't get in and say, I got to earn. You got in and said, I got to go learn. And I think you said, I became an intern.
That's right.
At a mortgage company so I could learn the business. Can you tell me a little bit about that mindset that started with a desire to learn?
So I've always had the mindset to learn from a very small child. So my grandmother taught me how to read before I went to school. They wanted to put me in daycare, but I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay with her. So they let me stay with her. And she taught me before I went to school. And she always instilled in me, if you guys watch Scandal, you'll know the line that I'm about to use. As a person of color, you have to be twice as good. In order for you to have opportunities, you have to be twice as good. So she made sure that she instilled in me that I understood that I needed to know where I was. I needed to learn what I needed to learn. And I needed to be twice as good as anybody else if I was going to get a certain opportunity.
Awesome. So sorry. Back to the story.
So when I started practicing, the office that I went to, they had 550 agents, you know, and I'll just say they're known as the training organization of the industry, which you guys hit. I'm in present company. So that's where I started. I started at KW, which was an awesome experience. But at the same time, it was so many people. And so what happened with that, I was brand new. I didn't actually go to real estate school. I took everything correspondence. So there was a gap. So I will say that for people that take your stuff correspondence, yes, it's more, you save on time, but there's no substitute for being in class and learning amongst other people. That's the one thing that I learned. If I could do it all over again, I would have done it that way. Because talking to people, you learn what you need to know from different people's experiences. And I didn't have that. So I came in with this license and now I need to figure out how to use it. So I decided to get involved. HAR sent out an email and you got to remember, I was a very young realtor at the time. And I looked even younger than what I was because we do look like that. And so most of the people I was seeing, they were like, how old are you? You know, and so that was a challenge for me to overcome. So I said, you know what? I need to learn what I'm doing. I need to be really sharp at this thing. So HAR sent out something that says, if we do a young professionals network, would you get involved? And I said, yes. And then the rest is history. So I got involved in YPN in Houston. That's the Young Realtors Professional Network. And it was the most awesome experience because you meet people that are, even though you are similar in age, everybody's experience level is different. Everybody's business is different. Some people are second, third generation. Some people are first generation and they're just killing it. And that's where I learned your success in real estate is about your hustle. It's about the way you take care of people. And it's about what you know.
For those of you who don't know, Emmerich has built one of the best learning and growing environments. And I'm interested in how you guys think about what are the characteristics. You know, you just talked about what are the things that are necessary for somebody to thrive in this business. Because we have some listeners that are very experienced. We have some listeners that are just getting into the business. So how do you think about what people should be looking for in an environment, you know, when you're getting going? And I don't know, Emmerich or Tiffany, how you guys have seen that. Because I see you guys as folks that have really created or thrived in an environment of building that space where one can flourish.
It's really about the spirit of the people in that environment. You can be in a learning environment. Because the information can be there. If the spirit of the people in that environment does not espouse the learning in which they're willing to share, it doesn't work well. So it's the spirit of the people coupled with the information that's available. Because it's two part.
Emmerich, do you mean the spirit of the people or the mindset of the people?
The spirit of the people. Because you can have the mindset of being learning based. However, if your spirit is not one of a sharing spirit, the information that you're giving and you're delivering can still come off as disingenuous to the person on the other end, and they never get your message. Maybe on that one time, however, you're not feeding their spirit, which is totally different. Not totally different. It's just a different component for a long-term growth opportunity or a long-term growth perspective.
So, Tiffany, you were sort of talking a little bit about what those characteristics were. So what do you think contributed to your rapid growth and success in the industry?
The number one thing I would say, hunger and drive, two of the same things. What Emmerich said is you have to have a passion for what you're doing. I feel like if you don't have the passion, if it's all monetary, and I tell people this all the time, because I get calls from lots of people all the time, and the first thing they say is, you know, I want to sell million-dollar homes, and I just want to make big checks. That's red flag number one. You know, we are in a business. It's relationship-driven. However, when people make moves in residential real estate, it's because something in their lives have changed. Whether it's they've gotten married, they've gotten divorced, they've had kids, they have parents coming back to live with them, they're moving for a job, there's something happened with their job where they have to downsize or they're upsizing, either or. So you are a part of somebody's journey at a very important moment in their life and a very important time in their life. And if your only focus is, I want to make a bunch of money off of you, that's not going to work. And it's ironic because what I have seen, especially over the time that I've had a company, I get calls, I can't tell you, from people from all over the U.S. And the fabric of what they're saying is the same thing. They're chasing money. And as long as you chase money in this business, I can speak for this business, but from what I've seen, as long as you chase money, you're going to have a hard time. Authenticity and your spirit. What Emmerich said, people can feel your spirit. So in the 17 years that I've been in this business, 83% of my business has never looked like me. And I had not thought of that until a good friend of mine brought that to my attention probably about 9 years ago. And so we decided to sit down and look at that. Why is that? Because I felt like, what am I doing wrong? That was the first thing that came to my mind. I didn't see it as a bigger picture.
Well, wait a minute, Tiffany. So you said that 87% of your business does not and did not look like you. And you thought, what am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because for a lot of Black agents, 87% of your business does look like you. And they too are saying, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah, I was thinking in the reverse because I was thinking, why am I not attracting more people that look like me? Why am I losing my community? Why is my community not attracted to what I'm doing? And that was a big mistake. It wasn't that they were not attracted to what I was doing because they weren't using me, but it's just that I had a more diverse business. I had a more diverse business because we go back to the education component. We come back to the authenticity component. We come back to the spirit. People want to do business with people they trust, people they feel like have their best interest in mind, and more and most important, people that know what they're doing. So the education, I've always had a lot of education within the industry, but more so, I've also always had a huge network of other realtors. Because remember, I started in YPN and I excelled really quickly in YPN. And so with that, you have an entire network. So not only am I now learning at the local level, I'm now learning at the national level, which trickled down to the state. And now I'm touching a variety of people. And that's why my business looks different, is because when people think of Houston, Texas, and they want something done right, they think of Tiffany Curry. They're not thinking of the color of my skin or my gender. They're thinking of my capabilities, my competence. And so that's what involvement in education does. And also community. I want to say this before I say anything else, community. You have to be plugged into your community. Find what you are passionate about. I know that I love children. I love the elderly. I want to make sure that they're taking care of the underserved and underserved communities because I know that they are forgotten about, especially with regentrification. And also animals. Those three things are a big thing for me. And I spend time doing those things that I love and that are passionate to me. I have a balanced life. And that's a big word, balance. So when you compile involvement, education, and balance, you are going to have a diverse business.
And, you know, it's interesting that you said that, Tiffany. I'm coming back to what you said, what's wrong? It's not a question of what's wrong. It's more of a question of what's right. And when I say what's right is that when you don't have fear of situations, you usually attract more things of what you're less fearful of. And a lot of times in our community, we don't attract other business because we're fearful to a certain degree that we may be inadequate in that environment. And that's just something different. And I know Bo can relate to that. because we've had all kinds of conversations.
I was trying to hold back and not go there, Emmerich. I was like, we're actually going to have this conversation or not?
And so it's not a what's wrong. It's a confidence thing. And you have the ability to attract other people to you because of a certain confidence level, and you don't fear that environment. And we just have to be comfortable in all, we have to be comfortable in most environments. That's a lie if we say we're going to be comfortable in all environments. That's just not true. We have to be comfortable in most environments. And then something else you said something about chasing money.
Mm-hmm.
I have a saying about chasing money. The only way you can ever chase something is if it's running from you.
I love that.
You can't chase something that's not running from you. And a lot of times people find themselves chasing money and money's running away from them because they're not operating from a spirit of abundance. And they're operating from a sense of lack. And most people, when they're chasing money, they never catch it. But a few people do. Most people don't ever catch it because of the spirit in which they're operating, which is the spirit of lack and not a sense of abundance. It goes both ways.
I want to know what Bo had to say about it.
Oh, yeah. Look at Julia, you got to start some trouble. No, my point was very simple. Like, Emmerich and I used to talk about this all the time because there's an opportunity in real estate. It's powerful to build strength within a community or a niche. And so if there's a community that you are well known in, people you associate with, there's real power in having deep penetration into that community. My view was a little different. It was simply that I want to do business, and I'm doing business in America. And if we only make up 12% of the people in America, and I limit my business to only serving 12% of the people, then I've limited my business. And I had no intention to limit my business because I didn't want to build a great black business. I wanted to build a great business.
Yes.
I just had a different goal. And so I don't think those things are necessarily at odds with each other. There's value in going deep into relationships and communities that you're a part of, that you value, that you can uniquely serve, that you understand. And from a business standpoint, there's value in, as Emmerich said, not having a fear to attack the whole market because we aren't the whole market. We are only a part of the market. And so my view was, hey, I've got a limited pool. I got to grow big. And so I got to look at my market as the whole market, even if I have certain sensitivities or things that I focus on that make me more interested in delivering a certain set of services or serving certain groups of people. So it's just it was a math problem.
Well, and that's why I said, when she said, what am I doing wrong by not attracting? There's a lot of agents I know are like, I don't know why I can't get anything other than black clients. I've been trying so hard to get it. And so it was interesting how you framed that.
And I thought about it from that perspective because when I was talking to my black friends in real estate and they were telling me about the percentages of their business, that's where that mindset came in. It was like, okay, well, what am I not doing right? And then, of course, years later, I realized it wasn't what I was doing wrong. I was actually doing things right. And that comes back from the leadership journey. And that confidence, that was a big word that you used, because that confidence more than likely came from my leadership journey. Because during that leadership journey, I entered most rooms where there were people that did not look like me. So I became comfortable around them. Because remember, this goes back to my grandmother teaching me and starting me out at a very young age before I went to school. And she instilled in me, if your education is where it needs to be, if you know what you need to know, you are not inferior in any room. And that's one big thing that she always taught me, because she said, most things are mindset. What you believe is what you achieve. And even though it rhymes, she was absolutely right. Because any room that I enter, no matter who's in that room, I never feel like I'm the underdog.
Good work, Grandma. Good work.
How did that confidence play a role in your decision to say, hey, I'm not just going to practice real estate, I'm going to own a real estate business? What made you decide to open your own real estate business?
Well, two things. One, when I first entered this industry, I always knew at some point I wanted to own my own company. And for the first 5 years, I was still not thinking that real estate would be my primary career. I was still thinking of going back and going to law school. And I had fears and reservations within those 5 years that too much time was passing me by, that I was waiting too long. So from that mindset, I was halfway in and halfway out, if that makes sense. And that played a major role in my first 5 years, and the growth that I did or did not have in that first 5 years, because I was still thinking this needs to be a side thing and I need to be in law school. If I don't go to law school, there's so many things that I will not be able to accomplish, which was absolutely wrong. Everything that I wanted to accomplish in my life as an attorney in terms of socialism, political involvement, community involvement, making an impact, I've done those things in real estate in a very much shorter amount of time. And I've had more visibility because although there's a sea of realtors, and you guys know this.
Particularly in Houston.
And I market over, I'm saying pre-COVID, 85% of the business is done by the top 15% of the agents. And nationwide, it's about 80-20 or somewhere in between there. So even though it's a big pool of people, it's a very small community. So the people that are actually involved or working in real estate, we know one another. Even with 50,000 realtors being here, we know one another. And so I think because I still had that in my mind, I was fearful that I was not going to be as successful in my life if I do not go to law school. So the first 5 years, that was a big piece of what was going through my mind. And I was getting nervous, and I won't kid you, I was getting scared. Because I was like, I'm letting too much time pass me by. I'm getting older and I'm probably going to lose opportunities that I would have had if I had just gone ahead and did this law school thing after those first 6 months. So I felt myself pushing away. And then I think it was a group that I was with, a group of people. And I always tell people, and when you look around your circle, if nobody in that circle inspires you or aspires you to be something that you never saw yourself becoming, you need a new circle. In terms of business, you need a new circle. And my circle started to change. And that happened from the volunteer area. Because you got to think, all these people that are in this volunteer realm, each person is doing something different. And so as my leadership became stronger and I began to elevate, I became a liaison for the NAR president in 2014. But also in 2012, before that, a good friend that you guys know, I'm sure you guys know Cokie. Cokie was invited to be on this PAG. It's a presidential advisory group. And he was not able to do it. And so they needed to fill it with another YPN. So I was I was his replacement. At that table, I got to sit with the heads of major commercial brokerages.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
NAR presidents from many previous years, well before me, people that own major real estate franchises and brokerages. And so now I'm the baby in this room. And these people have done a lifetime of things. So when you get to a table like that, if you're motivated to become anything, there's no way that you don't see ownership being around those type of people.
You know, you said something that like struck a chord with me. You said, as I got older. No, you didn't get older. You became more mature.
I like that.
See, when you reach a certain point in life, it's about maturity, not older. And I understand that part. So here's what you just brought up something. You mentioned something about, you just brought out the topic, which is ownership. And that's part of what we talk about, real estate ownership. I get all of the things. I'm inspired at YPN. That's all flowery and fluffery. But let's talk about the ownership part, because that's what people thrive for. You said you always wanted to own your company. Let's talk about this whole real estate ownership and this whole component of that, whether it be your building that you're talking about you want to own, whether it be investment properties, it's other businesses.
The real estate business she owns, yeah.
Yeah, the real estate business. You just wake up and own a real estate business.
Yeah, the real estate business she owns.
Right. Yeah, right.
Like, you won't wake up and just own a real estate business. So I've actually had my broker's license several years before I actually owned my company. When I was running my team, I knew that there were tax advantages. That's the mindset. You're already thinking in that space. So my business was structured, even though it was under another umbrella or a bigger umbrella. I was still under another company. I had already set my business up in the form of ownership. So I already had an LLC. I already was getting paid under that LLC, and everything was structured as a company, even though I was under another company. And ownership, for me, people were like, you should start your own company. As soon as I got the broker's license, they were like, you need to just go and start your own company. That was not my mindset. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to set myself up as a company within a company. I'm going to start to do my taxes that way. I'm going to start to do my payroll that way of my team. I'm going to start to do things that way. If I fall, first of all, I have people that I can go to that are already running a bigger umbrella on top of me. And then two, so I can actually start to practice this rather than just throw it out there. And so the idea of ownership, because I always knew from day one that I wanted to be an owner. It wasn't a matter of if, it was when. And so I am a person that I believe in the spirit, and I do things when I feel like I hear the voice of God, whether it's a sign or an image or just a feeling, and I operate that way. And so in 2019, I was beginning to feel a huge shift. And I was like, you know what? It's time. I'm ready to become my own company. And I was also in leadership at that time for NAR, and we were traveling with all the multicultural groups. And at these places, we would see all the franchises there. So they were trying to wave everybody down to talk about franchises, where most of the people were passing them by. And this is our group. This is our demographic. Most of the people were passing them by. They were just trying to see what they were giving away at the tables. But I decided, you know what? Let me ask you, what are you offering? If I start a company, what type of support and systems are you going to have that is actually going to, number one, complement my business, and number two, complement the people that are going to work for me? So that was the mindset. And then the office that I was at, I was in the luxury collection division. They got rid of that office. Their lease was up. It was their most expensive rent. So they consolidated because money was tight. So they consolidated. And that shift, it was pushing me. I was getting uncomfortable. Like I was already moving. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to do this move, then it may as well be my own move. So I'm ready to become an owner. And so I voiced that. I'm also a person that believes in what you speak. There's power in the tongue. So I started to share with people. And I told the broker that I was with, because one of the things that I've never been is a person that does things behind people's back. I have respect for people, especially people that have stuck with me or that we've done things together. So I talked to the broker that I was with, and we had a long conversation, and I told him I was interested in ownership. And I told him I'm possibly also interested in doing a franchise. And he said to me, well, I will support you. First, he gave me a long speech. That was the first thing. But he told me only 25% of the people that ever come to me and say they want to be their own company will actually make it. He said, and make sure you understand this. It's not that they're not top producers, because they typically are. He said, but being a top producer or a successful realtor is completely different than being a successful company owner. Those are two different things. So he says, a lot of top producers think because I'm making all this money or I'm selling all this real estate, I can be a successful company owner. But he said, there are two different things. He said, a lot of realtors, from my experience, aren't good business people. And I was like, whoa, you know, but I was like, you know, I wasn't really hearing that because that's not what I was thinking. I wanted to do what I wanted to do. Well, we did have this conversation. We did sit down and have this conversation. And I told him I was interested in doing a franchise. And at that time, there was a company called Real Living, which was a smaller arm of Berkshire Hathaway, because I knew he had most of Houston, and there were already two in Houston. So I said, you know, I'm possibly look at that too. So I went and looked at that, but he said, it was interesting. It's funny too. This is why I always believe in transparency. I shared with him what I was thinking, and he actually blessed it, because he shared with me afterwards. He says, well, you know, they won't talk to you because you're under my umbrella. My franchise agreement will not allow them to talk to you because it's a violation of my franchise agreement. He said, however, I will give them permission to speak to you. And see, I never knew that.
You know what? We'll have to have you back, Tiffany, to talk about franchise ownership, because I'm fascinated by this conversation. There's a lot of people often that say, why do you work for Keller Williams? Why don't you go open your own thing? I know they tell you that, Imric, because Imric has the largest black real estate brokerage in the country. And they probably just break off on your own. But why would somebody like you want to be in a franchise? Just do your own thing. I mean, you are Gary Keller. So it's interesting, you know, when you share your perspective about the benefits of you being a franchise of Berkshire Hathaway and why you wanted to do that. So we'll definitely have to have you back to talk. I want to know a lot more about that mindset and that process of owning a franchise rather than being a small broker.
I think definitely that would be a great topic and one that's much needed, especially for our community.
Yeah. Woo, Lord. I love it.
Yes, yes,
I love
yes.
it. I love it. I couldn't agree more. I love one thing though, Tiffany. I want to go back to one thing you said. I 100% let's stamp that. Let's do a franchise ownership, because I also think the entryway into business really, really matters. And you just said it's very different between being a successful realtor and a successful business owner.
Yes.
And people got that all confused sometimes.
They do.
I wanted to stamp one thing that I think is so interesting and says so much about you, which is that when you went to go lead and do something, you were conscious of and thoughtful about the person that you worked for. And I always say to people that if you want to have people determine wealth for you, you need to investigate the relationship you have with the person you determine wealth for. And if you are unwilling and ununderstanding of why you are in a system where you create wealth for somebody else, you are not going to know how to go build a system where other people are in a wealth creation relationship with you. And so we talk about leverage, and, you know, in KW, you talk about wealth determiners, and everybody's talking about, I got to go find me some buyer agents and some wealth. I'm going to sit and sip my cocktail on the beach, and they're going to just send checks to my mailbox. But ultimately, if you don't understand why you might be in a system, if you don't understand why Imric Peace chooses to create value for somebody else, then you don't really actually understand why anybody's going to create value for you.
That's it.
And I don't think we ask that question enough.
You know, Bo, it's interesting that you said that way, because Tiffany's path, and she said, I wanted to work in a system, under a system, to understand basically what this business runs like, and then I can go and create a business. That is the best way to do it, because that's not the way I did it. And that's not the way you did it either, Bo. If we had to take a look at it, what happened is we were blessed to have some type of internal compass to be able to run a business like this and have the right people around us to help us run a business like this, to miss a lot of the pitfalls and the mines. But what that meant was that we put a whole bunch of extra hours in to cultivate that business, to even get it to grow, whereby we probably could have been far leaps beyond and ahead of where we are if we had really worked under a system to understand what the system represents before we jumped out there. And I'll be transparent about that. And so that was a great thing. And that whole thing of ownership, particularly in our community, that's another conversation. We're going to talk about that. But we always want to own something. The reality is that we don't know how to run what we want to own. We want to own something and don't know how to run it. That's a setup right there.
Yeah.
Because you want to be the broker, and what you end up being is broker than everybody else. You're the broker that's broker than everybody else.
So, Imric getting us going. But this idea, right? This idea, and I think, you know, you highlight this so well. We glorify ownership in today's society, but ownership's not equal.
No.
You could be an owner and writing checks every day to pay the bills, and it could be a huge financial drain, or you could create huge amounts of wealth. And so the question is, what do you own? Are you prepared to make it work, right? And do you have the right relationships? It might be that studying under somebody else or owning part of something is better than owning all of something.
Wait a minute, Bo. The most important thing is, do you have the ability to run it?
Mm-hmm. And do you want to learn how to run it?
Exactly.
I think that's interesting. So can you talk to us a little bit? Because we've had a great conversation. I know this is a topic we could probably have multiple sessions on. So let's come back to this idea of franchise ownership. We got to hit one more thing. And that is the importance of wealth creation in our community. And, you know, you've blazed the trail in going out there and doing that. I know your involvement in your community and the passion you have for giving back in Detroit. Can you talk to us a little bit? We talked about why representation is important. Why is wealth creation important in our community, and how do we achieve that? How do we change the statistics we all know that are so skewed in our community?
Well, first and foremost, I want to commend us as a people for where we are today. Because think about it, we're not so many generations out of slavery. I just want to say that. And to be living in our time right now with what we're seeing in the world, what we're seeing in America, but also what we're seeing right here, the four of us right here, this is huge. So even though, although we still have a long way to go, we have still come a very long way. So building wealth is crucial for our community. And when I say our community, I want us to understand too, because oftentimes a lot of us have to pay what's called the black tax, or we're passing money forward to our parents and grandparents that we're not passing anything back to our children, where other cultures are doing the opposite. The parents and grandparents are passing money down to their children. And I got to see that firsthand in my business because remember, it's very diverse. So a lot of young people, professionals that were buying homes that I was helping, I was also with their parents were also involved as well because they were giving them the 20% down payment because they don't want them to pay PMI, or they were buying it cash with the money that they inherited. And so much of my business was like that for a certain demographic, but it wasn't our demographic. Our demographic was scraping to get the down payment. Mom and dad and auntie and all these people had so much input when they were coming out to look with homes with them. They were interfering in the transaction, but they weren't bringing anything monetary to the transaction, if that makes sense. So building wealth is very crucial for us because number one, with our office space, especially under a franchise, we of course have to have brick and mortar. Originally, we were going to do this 7-year lease for this immaculate build out in a prime area. And then I looked at the gross amount, and it was over 7 figures that we were going to be spending on this over that time. And I thought about it, I can buy a building for that. And in 7 years, right, after it's, if we do all that, I'm doing stuff for somebody else's property. And when that lease is up, if I want to stay there, my rent is going to go up. It was going up anyway, but it was going to go up that much more because we would have made it that nice. So I thought to myself, I said, you know what, why don't we do this, but in our own space that we own? That way, in 7 years after it's completed, a couple things. One, we lease out enough of the building to where our tenants are paying for the mortgage. So we get rid of our overhead for brick and mortar, just let somebody else pay that, but we actually own it. That's number one. And number two, 7 years from now, it will be worth a whole lot more than what we paid for it. And it's actually not costing us to actually hold it. So I started to think, I said, you know, we'll work smarter and not harder. We'll put a mortgage company in there. We'll put an insurance company in there. We'll put a tax service in there. We'll put these other businesses that could be feeder businesses for our business where we can complement one another. We create business opportunities for one another, but more importantly, they take care of one of our biggest overheads. And so I started to think like that. I said, you know, I want to build wealth. As I was sharing with you guys before the call started, in 2019, 3 Houston brokerages, well-known Houston brokerages, went out of business. All 3 of those companies were doing over $1 billion a year in sales. And when you ask yourself, you're like, they have all these agents, they have all this production. How could they be out of business? How could they be out of money? They were bleeding money for years because they have all these agents, they have all these things. But one of the things I noticed that none of them had, none of them owned their real estate. They all had these very fancy big offices that cost all this money in very prime areas of Houston, but that was money going to a landlord. That was not money coming back to them. And so when you think about it, you have all these expenses. So when you think about ownership of something, this is why a lot of people fail in ownership, is you have to watch the money. You have to watch the money. People are more focused on the more money I spend, the more money I make. That is not always the case. And so that was the biggest thing. My fear was that I did not want to be one of those companies. And because that happened right before I started my brokerage, 2 of the companies actually merged. 1 actually got lost in a bigger merger because their books weren't what they said they were. So the company that they were going to merge with, they were going to pay them, end up having not to pay them a dime. They end up getting their agents for nothing. And these companies have been in business longer than I've been alive. I just want to tell you that without saying names. And so when you think of that, somebody that has built these type of businesses that are doing over $1 billion a year in sales, and they're leaving this industry with nothing. So building wealth was the number one component. So owning our space that we're in, that's number one on our component list. The other thing for me is, remember, we talked about urban planning and development. We want to build communities. We know what our communities need. We know what they're missing. We know what they're lacking. And who better to instrument that or spearhead that or be a part of that than us? We know the city. We know the opportunity. We know what appreciates. And why not use the community to help build that? So we are actually getting involved in crowdfunding, where you're actually giving the community a chance to actually invest in itself. So there are a lot of different things in terms of building wealth. The other thing that I learned from another organization, they want to triple their wealth in this country through real estate. That's by owning the home they're in, owning at least one investment rental property, and then owning the commercial business that they're in, owning a commercial space and leasing it to the business. One of the things with the second property they wanted to own, the second residential property, this was their mindset. And I didn't share this with you guys. The thought process and the mindset for them with owning two pieces of real estate at least was when they leave this to their kids can actually take over the property, renovate it to their personal taste, and not have a mortgage. Think about that. You leave these to your kids. So you can come in, because they were also showing 15-year mortgages, right? The benefits of having 15-year mortgages. Well, if I buy two properties right now, and one of them is an investment property, I have a child today, 18 years later, when I get ready to turn this property over to them, they don't have to pay rent. They can start in that house. So that was the idea of building generational wealth. And I always tell people this, it's not how much money you make, it's how you use what you make. That's a big thing. The other thing is, and I know this is a different day and a different time, I've gotten involved in global real estate. That's been a big thing for me. And of course, I look different from what is typically in global. But in global, I was working with people coming from different countries, working with brokers from different countries, working from that perspective. Now going forward for 2025, we want to sell globally as well. And in that, what we've started to learn in learning some of these other countries, there's investment opportunity in all these different places where we as American citizens can actually own real estate and lease it out in other countries. So we're going to be taking a group of our clients abroad to another country with a friend who's a broker that knows those countries and showcase to them the investment opportunity that they can actually invest in buying those countries. And some of us can actually partner on a few deals in those countries. And for me, it's my business has always been about one thing. That's taking care of people and giving them something that they could not think of themselves, whether it's efficiency, it's opportunity. And from the global standpoint, when I saw that, I was like, you know what? I want to share this. I want to just do this myself. I want to share this with other people. I want to share this with agents. Not just the agents within our organization, but I want to share this with other people because we're seeing all these companies come in and buy U.S. real estate. We need to be buying U.S. real estate, but also we can buy real estate in other countries. So when you go on vacation, you don't have to go to an expensive hotel. You can actually stay in your own property. And guess what? If you want to give your client or you're trying to get a big account, you want to impress them. Hey, look, you can go stay the week at my spot here. Everything is courtesy of me, you know, or for your best clients. And so it was about more than just one transaction. It was about something greater, but it was also an opportunity to build wealth around what we were already doing.
Well, it is so exciting, Tiffany, to have you with us today. Your story is powerful, from sort of just checking out real estate, leaving a law career, to getting into this, to building your own brokerage. It's also very clear that your story's only partially written and that there's a lot more to do. And so it's been a pleasure having you here on the Color of Money podcast. I love the way that you don't think about days and dollars. You're thinking about decades and generations and legacy and impact and stretching our minds to go further. Because when we care about people, when we care about leaving a legacy and we open our minds to new things, there's so much possibility that can come about. So we are so grateful to have you, and we look forward to having you back to dig into some of the other topics that we had today.
I can't wait.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Tiffany. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of the Color of Money podcast. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience. This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.